Hello, this is Eileen, and I will be reading part one of the Pantagraph for April 28, 2017, Friday. I will begin with the front page. Normal Senior Center Still Growing After First Year. In Normal by Derek Bai. A year in, Normal Township Senior Activity and Recreation Center, ARC, still hasn't hit its limits. Membership at the 600 East Willow Street Center has exploded from several hundred to nearly 4,000 since it opened April 25, 2016, but officials said this week they prepared for more. At no point does it seem overwhelming, said Communications Coordinator Samantha Olson. I may not know 3,800 names, but I know 3,800 faces. During its first year, the center has added activities, volunteer and senior-focused tenants to what was already a busy place for those 55 years old and older to exercise, learn, and socialize. Officials said when they introduced an annual fee for the center, $25 per person or $40 per couple, they feared a backlash, but that hasn't happened. New members continue to sign up, no fewer than 150 a month so far. The 30,000 square foot center replaced a 12,000 square foot facility at 1110 East Douglas Street that was old and had few rooms. The bigger location added an auditorium, billiards room, fitness room, pickleball courts, walking track, and flexible spaces. Those flexible places host not only a variety of card games, but also 19 fitness classes, several informational seminars per week, and other events. No day on the April ARC calendar has fewer than 5 events, and most have more. There's a lot I don't know if we anticipated having, Olson said with a laugh. The center could soon have space for more as well. The staffing is trying to raise $100,000 to renovate 1,300 square feet on the first floor that Olson hopes will be used as flexible activity space. Some funding for the renovation is expected to come from the township, which spent about $5 million to get the facility in what had been an Illinois State University recreation facility up and running. Local tax money subsidizes the operation, which also receives an annual contribution from the City of Bloomington Township. Director of Operations Mindy Morgan credited a lot of the center's growth to volunteers. She estimated about a 24 volunteers provide the equivalent of about 15 full-time employees work. The ARC has only 5 full-time staff. The center has also 2 unused, unfinished 1,000 square foot offices on the second floor, which currently hosts Faith in Action and the Illinois State University Speech and Hearing Clinic. Members can also get foot reading screenings from a podiatrist and chair massages on the first floor of the building. There's a lot more to our health and well-being than physical and nutritional nuts and bolts, said Morgan, of the variety of activities and services at the ARC. It starts with just feeling good. You walk through the door, and it's intangible, but you feel good here. And that's what we hear from our members. Tom Waite, a 64-year-old Bloomington resident and State Farm retiree, agreed. He started going to the ARC for pickleball last August, but has also enjoyed meeting new people there. I had a tour the first day, and I was surprised how many things there are to do, he said. I encouraged others to go there for pickleball and other activities. Mike Guadarrama, a 55-year-old Normal resident and AFNI employee, said pickleball is why he joined the ARC as soon as he could last week. His wife, Janet, took him there several times as a guest. I liked the atmosphere and told her I could wait until I turned 55 and could join and learn to play, he said. I never had the impression it was so crowded I would be inconvenienced. I think it brings great value to the community, the senior citizen community especially. The center is open 6:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 6:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday, and 8 a.m. to noon Saturday. For more information, visit activityandrecreationcenter.org or call 309-888-9099. The next article, School Officials Discuss a New Education Funding Model, by Julie Evelsizer, in Normal. Central Illinois educators met Thursday to discuss how what they see as a cookie-cutter education funding model hurts school districts and how a new plan could individualize and fulfill school needs. Leroy School Superintendent Gary Tipsord led the discussion about the evidence-based school funding model at a presentation Thursday at Heartland Community College in Normal. Similar discussions will take place across the state this month as part of the Fix the Formula Illinois campaign, a push for state lawmakers to correct the current education funding system and consider the evidence-based model as a solution. This model is based on research and looks at each of our kids uniquely, said Tipsord. Resources should exist in all schools so the conditions exist to give students a high-quality education. Through the evidence-based model, a target for adequate educational resources is generated for each district. The target is based on school enrollment, geographic location, and 27 academic elements. Those elements include classroom size, English language learning, school counselors, and instructional coaches. Tipsord said the element requirements for each district are different. Once all the factors are determined, then the financial need is calculated. The need is met by local, state, and federal payments. If there is a gap between funds and the adequacy target, the state would have to fill the gap. Through this model, districts with the greatest needs are funded by the state first, said Tipsord. Most public schools in the U.S. receive an average of 46% of their funds from their states. Illinois public schools receive only 26% of funding from the state. Lindsay Hall, superintendent of Morton Schools, said that while her district receives most funding from local taxes, the evidence-based model would benefit the state as a whole. When the funding model for all students improves, we're creating a better future for our state and families and preparing kids for college and careers, said Hall. For too long, where a child lives in Illinois and their zip code has determined the quality of education they receive. McLean County Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel said Unit 5 is currently $38 million below the current adequacy threshold, while some northern Illinois school districts are nearly $34 million above the threshold. This funding formula would balance that and create equity for our state, Daniel said. I'm very appreciative that legislators are presenting this option and it's on the table. It's time for us as educators and concerned citizens to push our legislatures to find a solution. We should push not just the evidence-based model, but also a state budget. Peoria Superintendent Sharon Carrot said she's tired of talking about the need to improve from the General Assembly. Unfold your arms, take a step forward, and start doing the work you were elected to do, said Carrot, referring to Springfield lawmakers. More information about the evidence-based funding model, including ways to contact legislators, can be found at www.fundingilfuture.org. The next article, Bloomington Normal Soldier Killed in Afghanistan, Led by Example, by Lenore Sabata in Bloomington, a 2013 Normal Community High School graduate, was among two U.S. soldiers killed in action Wednesday in Afghanistan. Josh Rogers, 22, son of Kevin and Vondra Rogers of Bloomington, competed in track and football at NCHS. The family was notified of his death Wednesday night, said Paul Thomason, senior pastor of Gibson City Bible Church, who talked with Rogers' grandfather. The Defense Department does not release names of those killed in action until 24 hours after family notification. One of Rogers' NCHS coaches, track coach Brian Thomas, said Thursday, "It's a sad day for our school and our community," a sentiment shared by dozens of people who have commented on the story on the Pantograph's Facebook page. He said Rogers had a work ethic that was second to none. "He was really quiet. You could almost miss him," said Thomas. "He led by example in both football and track." Thomas also noted that the hardworking Rogers wanted to be an Army Ranger, and he did it. His football coach, Wes Temples, echoed Thomas's description of Rogers as hardworking, quiet leader. "Josh was a tremendous kid," Temples said. "When I hear his name, what comes to mind is how hard he worked, no matter what it was, whether it was football or school. He did things the right way." Temple said hearing about Rogers' death was heartbreaking and incredibly sad. "You feel for his family." He said serving our country was an honorable and brave thing. He and another soldier were killed and a third was wounded when they came under attack during a raid against insurgents in Nangarhar province, according to the Defense Department. They were conducting an operation with Afghan National Defense and Security Forces at the time, said the department. The target of the raid was a prison where the Islamic State kept civilian prisoners, said Atullah Gagani, a spokesperson for the Nangarhar governor's office. Nangarhar province is where the U.S. military dropped the largest non-nuclear weapon used in combat, known as a massive ordnance air blast bomb, or the mother of all bombs, on a cave and tunnel complex in mid-April as part of the ongoing battle against ISIS. The province is in the northeast part of the Afghanistan and borders Pakistan. U.S. officials have refused to comment on battle casualties suffered by the Islamic State, but Afghan officials have said 94 militants were killed in the bombing and another 40 were killed in Wednesday night's operation. Nearly 2,400 U.S. military personnel have died in Afghanistan and related regions since U.S. forces entered Afghanistan in 2001. The most recent deaths bring to 3 the number of U.S. service members killed in Afghanistan this year. All 3 deaths occurred in the Nangarhar this month. "The fight against ISIS-K is important for the world, but sadly, it is not without sacrifice," said General John Nicholson, commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, in a statement. He said, "On behalf of all U.S. forces and our coalition partners, I offer our deepest sympathies to the families, friends, and fellow service members of our fallen comrades." The next article, "One Wounded in South Bloomington Shooting," by Roger Miller. In Bloomington, one man was wounded in a gunfire incident Thursday night at the South Bloomington apartment complex. An undetermined number of gunshots were reported about 9:15 p.m. in the Highland Hills apartment complex in the 1700 block of Springfield Road, police said. A man wounded in the lower extremities was driven by others at the scene to Advocate Broman Medical Center, police said. He was being transferred to a Peoria hospital, but the nature and severity of his injuries were not clear, police said. Neighbors reported hearing two gunshots in quick succession and then seeing about four teenagers or young adults run east from the scene in front of the building at 1716 Springfield. They also reported seeing a sport utility vehicle speed away, and police said a second vehicle may have been involved. The parking lot area in front of 1716 Springfield is a three-story, 12-unit apartment building, was cordoned off with police tape, and police searched the area for shell casings and other evidence. No one is in custody, and police are still investigating. Additional information on the victim, including his age and the incident, was not available late Thursday night. The next article, Police Highlight Crackdown on Dangers of Distracted Driving, submitted by Kevin Barlow in Normal. Too many people think they can multitask even while driving a car, and that can lead to trouble, according to the Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner. Some people think they can drive and talk on a cell phone at the same time, he said. But multitasking while driving a car is not easy to do, and it's dangerous. The Normal Police Department is one of several area agencies cracking down on distracted driving during the inaugural Illinois Distracted Driving Awareness Week, which started Monday and ends Friday. Drivers may use cell phones behind the wheel only if they are hands-free. That means using voice-activated technology such as Siri. Drivers are prohibited from using cell phones of all types, even voice-activated ones, in school zones and construction zones. Drivers are also prohibited from using any electronic device to access the internet or to text, email, or otherwise compose, read, or send electronic messages while driving a motor vehicle. We started pushing the message at the end of last week through social media, Bleichner said. We receive complaints on a regular basis about motorists talking on cell phones. Several agency partners partnered together this week to target drivers on cell phones, including the Illinois State Police, said Lieutenant Jason Henderson, an operations officer with ISP's Pontiac-based District 6. Years ago, we placed an emphasis on DUI and seatbelt usage, and those are still priorities for us, Henderson said. But now we add in the distracted driving because society has changed and we have to keep up with those changes. The first distracted driving law went into effect 7 years ago, but in 2016, new laws banned the use of any communication or electronic device while driving a vehicle. It is an enormous problem and an epidemic across the nation, he said. Our focus this week is to bring awareness to the situation. It's not just about getting a ticket. It's about avoiding crashes that can lead to injury or fatalities. Violating the law can be costly. A first violation for the offense is $120 and can be increased with multiple violations or when a violation occurs in a work or school zone. Through Wednesday, the Bloomington Police Department has conducted more than 60 traffic stops for distracted driving violations and said Public Information Officer Elias Mendiola. The Bloomington Police Department feels strongly about keeping our citizens safe, he said. The road to destruction is paved with distraction. Illinois State University Police Chief Aaron Woodruff's staff is assisting with catching distracted driving around the Normal campus. We talk a lot about pedestrian safety, but when a driver is looking down at a cell phone, that can be extremely dangerous, he said. Around the campus area, you have to be on the lookout consistently for the unexpected. There is never a good reason to use a cell phone while driving. While the current effort focuses on cell phones, police remind drivers that other distractions, such as eating or even changing radio stations, can take attention off the road. distracted driving statistics. The Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police released the following data based on findings from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety. 3,477 people were killed and an estimated 391,000 injured in motor vehicle crashes involving distracted drivers in 2015. There is a 9% increase in fatalities as compared to the previous year. 10% of fatal crashes, 15% of injury crashes, and 14% of all police-reported motor vehicle crashes in 2015 were reported as distracted, affected crashes. Texting while driving has become an especially problematic trend among millennials. Young drivers 16 to 24 years old have been observed using handheld electronic devices while driving at higher rates than older drivers since 2007. An analysis of 2009 through 2012 data showed that even while more than 8 in 10 drivers believe it's completely unacceptable for a motorist to text or email while behind the wheel, more than a third of those same respondents admitted to reading text messages while driving. Just as disturbing, even as fatalities go up, fewer drivers seem concerned about texting while driving. According to the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety's 2015 Traffic Safety Culture Index, significantly fewer motorists, 77%, believe texting while driving is a problem, down from 96% in 2013, a 19-point drop in just 2 years. Next, engineering firm recommends Uptown Underpass. Derek Bai in Normal. Several attendees at the public meeting Thursday on the future railroad crossing at Uptown Station threw their support behind an underpass, including the consultant studying the project. The Normal City Council is set to decide in June what kind of railroad crossing, if any, to be built to get Amtrak passengers and other pedestrians from the station to the south side of the tracks. But New York City-based engineering firm WSP Parsons Brinckerhoff is making the case for the underpass with park and plaza attached. This one provides many very good amenities. It helps with safety. It has very little issues with connectivity. It helps people move between the different sides of the track. It also helps support economic development, said Stephanie Brown, lead planner for the engineering firm on the team studying the project through a $1.4 million contract with the town of Normal. The consultant, which presented on several crossing options, including building an overpass and building nothing, also will provide updated cost estimates. Normal's 2014 Uptown 2.0 plan was first recommended building an underpass listed at $12.7 million and an overpass at $8.6 million. The council nearly bid the project as an overpass before delaying the decision. An underpass, if that option is selected, is 3 to 5 years from completion and would require state or federal funding, town officials have said. John Croft and Bill Hammett, both Normal residents, encouraged the town to fight for an at-grade crossing, a much cheaper option that Amtrak and Union Pacific have ruled out. Ron Ulmer of Normal questioned why no party involved brought up the issue sooner. All these expenses are getting to be pretty difficult, Croft said, referring also to one uptown on the Circle, a building under construction across Beaufort Street from Uptown Station. He suggested the crossing issue go to a referendum. Bob Broad of Normal suggested the referendum on the crossing was the April 4th mayoral election, in which incumbent Mayor Chris Coos won a fourth term through a very narrow margin. It's been estimated the investments the town of Normal has made have returned something at the level of 250% return. People say no all the time. It's worth reminding ourselves that in virtually every case, the naysayers were wrong, Broad said. The value to the town of these investments has been enormous, so let's keep doing it. Patrick Dullard of Normal suggested the cost difference to the town between an underpass and overpass would be relatively small, given the need for the state or federal money for the crossing. Under a 80-20 match, he said a $4 million overall price difference cost to the town only $800,000. I've asked the council to think about not just the taxpayers now, but the taxpayers of the future, he said. A forward-thinking, easily traveled way to get from one side to the other is probably our best long-term option. And next, driver jailed after crashing into Wittenberg Lutheran Center. Kevin Barlow submitted this in Normal. A Bloomington man faces 7 charges, including driving under the influence, after Normal police said his car crashed into the Wittenberg Lutheran Center early Wednesday morning. Normal Police Assistant Chief Steve Petrilli said that around 3 a.m. Wednesday, officers attempted to stop a car driven by Willie Dawson, 33, of Normal. We tried to stop him and he took off, he said. At that time, we didn't chase him because it didn't meet our criteria for a pursuit. But then he crashed. The Reverend Bill Jensen, pastor of the center that provides college campus ministry in the Twin Cities, was notified about 3:30 a.m. of the crash at 201 South Main Street. It ruined an entire wall of our kitchen, and that is going to have to be replaced, he said. It's a load-bearing brick wall and completely destroyed a brick tool shed. It took out our side. He was flying. He had to be going really fast. An accident reconstructionist was called to the scene, Petrilli said, but the investigation is continuing. In all my time as a police officer, I have never seen anything quite like this, Petrilli said. An accident report indicated Dawson was driving south on Kingsley Street at the time of the crash. Once he hit the kitchen, it probably slowed him down, Jensen said. Then he took out the shed and tumbled across the parking lot and wound up in the lot next door. Dawson was transported to Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal, where he was treated for injuries. He was arrested at 5:03 a.m. Wednesday and appeared in court Thursday. He was jailed in lieu of posting $5,335. Jensen said that even at the time of that time in the morning, it was fortunate that there were no other injuries. At this time of the year, there could have been students in our kitchen because sometimes they come in to cram all night, he said. There were no cars in the parking lot, thank God. When I got there, the first thing I saw was a child's seat in the parking lot that must have flown out of the car, he said. By the grace of God, he was the only one in the car, and maybe he will live to turn this into something positive somehow. Dawson was also charged with driving on a suspended license, aggravated fleeing, improper turn at intersection, driving with a broken headlight or taillight, disregarding a traffic control device, improper turn signal, improper lane usage, operating an uninsured vehicle, reckless driving, squealing or screeching tires, failure to reduce speed, resisting a peace officer, unlawful use of a weapon, unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, obstructing justice, and criminal damage to property greater than $300. Well, that's all I've got for you today. This has been Eileen reading the Pantograph for Friday, April 28th, 2017. Have a great day. Bye-bye.